When my sister's kids were growing up, she warned me that I wasn't to talk about pot smoking in front of them. I was ordered to deny any knowledge or interest in the subject if it came up. I didn't feel good about this directive, but respected my sister and did as I was told. In short, I lied. So when both my nephews were in their teens and clearly bonging on and hitting the bottle, I wanted to share with them my experiences with pot, partly coming from a ridiculously misguided notion that I could help them, but mostly from a desire to set my own record straight and allow us to compare notes across the decades. I was canny about it. I sent my story to them on paper, no digital copy. I didn't want to be the Facebook sensation of the day. So here we go for my dear nephews. Hey boys, Auntie Amanda used to be a pothead. Here are two principles worth thinking about. One, never mix pot with tobacco. Two, grow your own. Getting stoned with a mix of tobacco and pot is very different than just getting stoned with pot. The two elements might make good sense on economic grounds, but make no sense on a deeper level of getting the most from marijuana, a herb that deserves more respect than being paired with a highly addictive stepped-on product like tobacco. In the 70s, the decade I came of age, Leonard Cohen referred to chuff as the great god marijuana. From my first experience of smoking pot, I took to heart these words. He so understood. Smoking rocked. I also was deeply impressed to learn about modernist writer Gertrude Stein and her lover Alice B. Toklas with her famous hash cookies. Gertrude and Alice lived in Paris from the early 1900s to 1930s, and were literary and cultural leaders for Americans visiting the continent. They were friends with Picasso and Hemingway, amongst others, all of which carried a lot of weight for an impressionable girl from Perth, Western Australia. I really needed role models, because in Claremont, WA, when I left school, it seemed that pot smoking had skipped a generation. My parents had had little or no exposure to marijuana, so were laughably in the dark about the subject. I think most of the adults in my world would have been hard put to recognise the plant. As for tobacco, everyone was doing it in the 70s in a way that would astonish today's teenagers. It didn't take long to uncover the politics of smoking via the long-running war against a plant that has been on the go since the early 1900s. Information that my pot-smoking friends and I gleefully unearthed in the 70s and 80s. We found that in the 18th and 19th centuries, hemp was the biggest commercial crop in the world as it was used to manufacture rope, an essential element in the global trade then run by sailing ships. It was also used to manufacture the high-grade paper that US dollars were printed on. Thomas Jefferson, revered US president, famously made his fortune on fields of cannabis, a fact which we found hilarious. Hemp has also been used for medicinal purposes for years, 5,000 years. There's plenty of evidence of its medicinal use and food value from cultures around the world. The plant produces a huge quantity of seed, and every seed has a drop of oil that constitutes both a nutritious food and an oil with healing properties. These healing properties include claims that the elements known as cannabinoids, including THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, the one that gets you high, can cure cancer. I know in WA there's a strong underground market for the oil used by people either alongside or instead of medically sponsored cancer treatments. People using it to treat their own diseases have a sophisticated knowledge of the different cannabinoids required for their particular tumours, gained by talking to other patients and a lot of online research. There are also parents sourcing pot to help stall epilepsy in their children. In the USA in the early part of the 20th century, hemp was reclassified as a harmful drug, thereby enabling new synthetic materials like nylon that were being developed as byproducts of the oil industry to get a lion's share of the market. Hemp also stood in the way of the growing and marketing of cotton, a product that needs three times the amount of water than hemp to flourish and renders the ground it grows on infertile because of its high reliance on insecticides. Under pressure from big business with vested interests in the oil and cotton industry, the plant was rebadged as marijuana as part of a push to demonise it. I wonder why. Was this word considered alien? Mary Jane, the nickname that re-endeared the word to Western ears, came out of marijuana. This needs more research. In the early 20s, I remember going to an alternative film venue and watching an anti-dope propaganda movie called Reefer Madness from 1936. This hilariously depicted straight-looking dudes puffing on joints and lurching instantly into insane behaviour. A kind of propaganda that became a regular part of the arsenal for the they are lying to us counterculture. This certainly fed into my distrust of authority figures, especially the medical profession, a mob I'm still struggling to forgive. The demonisation and criminalisation of weed served in the USA as a way of criminalising African Americans and rolled on to become a handy way of silencing young people in Queensland and WA when eco-campaigning took hold in the 70s onwards. Remember Joe Bjelke-Petersen? It was a great tool for him. I was personally devastated with the attitude shown to people who smoke dope by one of my first and greatest literary loves, Raymond Chandler. Considered to be one of the fathers of noir crime, along with Dashiell Hammett, Raymond occasionally introduced minor characters, usually black car park assistants or hotel concierges who smoked pot. These people were presented as living in a stunned mullet kind of pot haze, allowing private eye Philip Marlowe to demonstrate his contempt for dopers. It was clear that Chandler viewed pot smokers as useless lowlife. That hurt. The fact that both Chandler and his creature Marlowe regularly self-medicated with enormous amounts of alcohol was never considered a problem. This breathtaking hypocrisy continues unabated, despite recent federal moves to allow the export of the product for medicinal uses. The voices calling for an end to prohibition with a ludicrous war on drugs are never many, and rarely from those in position of power. The idea that people who get into trouble with drugs could be helped rather than criminalised is there, but somehow never gets serious system-changing attention. When I lived regionally in Victoria and got to know good gardeners, I met a few who grew mixtures of herbs that could be used instead of tobacco in a number, or joint, or spliff as we call them. Pineapple sage, coltsfoot and other lovelies were in the aromatic mix. Damiana is a contemporary choice amongst smokers I know. I always thought that rolling a number was the best way to smoke, but this thinking was possibly a result of my confused 1970s hippie sharing tendencies. The physical reality is it is better to take in as little carcinogens as possible, so a bong or a pipe is clearly the more efficient option. Nowadays, smokers who are serious about balancing their smoking against a healthy diet and lifestyle use vaporizers. To inhale pot through the medium of steam with an electric inhaler is supposedly a healthier option than the hot burn option of joints. Makes sense to me, but I'm not going there. I predict, my dear nephews, that you will eventually want to stop smoking either pot or tobacco. It's a lot easier to unpick the addictions if you keep the two elements separate. And I define addiction as a compulsion to use a substance even when you know it's making your life worse. I wean myself off that pernicious weed tobacco for the last time in the mid-90s, never to return. And I regularly take time off pot, but it remained in my life in skinny little numbers until it gradually started to be less appealing into middle age. So there are two great reasons for growing your own. You know exactly what you are ingesting, and except for the paradoxical fact that you become a criminal yourself by growing the plant, it keeps you out of the black market where serious money-oriented criminal behaviour might be happening. I was 18 years old before I saw a real live marijuana plant. It was growing on the side of a bush track in the foothills of the Himalayas in India. When I connected that the contraband I bought furtively from dodgy strangers in pubs in Perth was one and the same as this beautiful hibiscus-sized bush, I was furious. Really? It's a plant. Who knew? One that grows wild and shows all the ease and pioneer capacity of a weed. One that is so generous and lush in growth that if it is given the basics, it can grow enormous and produce value in food, medicine, and mind-altering entertainment. No wonder teenagers hit such dark times, such lies they are told. How ridiculous is it that the real life of this plant is bastardized to the point that marijuana becomes effectively debotanized for urban users. Back home in Australia, I experimented with growing cannabis sativa and loved the plants to bits, not least because I didn't have to buy the stuff if I wanted to smoke. It grows with the vigour of a weed, and you can turn male, female, or hermaphrodite depending on complex factors, but you can Google this stuff. There are a few funny pot versus police stories from the 80s, but maybe a not so funny story happened in the 90s in a share house in Richmond, Victoria. The cops turned up and found my housemate's large plants. But in this case, it turned out we were delighted they came, because the reason they arrived in the backyard was because in one of their horseback patrols down the lane behind the house, they spotted two men armed with baseball bats waiting to get over the fence, trying to get at the rich crop of pot that was entering its final growing period. Maybe at the time it was illegal to have a few plants. I think the only people charged were the lads with the bats, so sometimes the cops acted justly and wisely. But come to think of it, they probably took the plants with them when they left. As for the selling or buying of marijuana, in my world, pot became like crayfish or lemons or passion fruit. It's a produce that is a tradable commodity. It is its own currency. This is perhaps especially true when living regionally, where people have more privacy and space to grow the plant. When people are serious about smoking, they become serious about securing their own supply, and some become master growers of magnificent plants. If it was wine, they would be winning awards for applying themselves with such industry over decades. These people are happy to get everyone stoned if it's that kind of a party. I first tried marijuana on the night of my 16th birthday. Someone handed me a joint, and I remember being amazed and delighted at the feeling, before I got the head spins and started throwing up. I had been drinking, an activity I don't have any talent for, but I never forgot how rich with promise that first puff was. When I started trying to buy pot a few years into the mid to late 70s, I was still an absolute novice. We must have scored at Steve's, the local pub on the river in Netherlands that was a magnet for young people at the time. Buddha or Thai sticks, marijuana heads, were pressed around a small stick and tied with red thread in small foils for $15. We must have had other sources before we grew our own, but I can't remember them. I was once sold, mortifyingly, a small foiled parcel of what might have been parsley. A friend from Sydney, much more advanced in the pot smoking stakes at this time, tells me that she used to score pot by the pound for $300. A pound is a hell of a lot of pot, 14 ounces to be precise, and pot was then $30 an ounce. Marijuana jumped exponentially in price to $300 an ounce in the late 70s. Then for years, it seemed to follow the price of gold, remaining fairly stable in price. And then gold went ballistic sometime in recent memory. But even now, it still seems to be selling at about $350 to $400 for an ounce. But of course, by the gram, which is how it is often sold, that ounce translates into a much bigger street value. Criminality. The price fluctuates seasonally, of course. Like any produce, it's harder to get at certain times of year. In Victoria and WA, the traditional planting time is Grand Final Day in late September, with a harvest time around Easter, which means that the product is harder to get in the summer. I always preferred bush pot to the hydroponic product, which is grown under lights and is chemically enhanced to produce stupidly high concentrations of THC. The latter can produce zombie-like symptoms in the user and is as different from naturally grown product as the tomato picked in your own backyard is to the tomato sold in supermarkets. 1970s teenagers, like me, came of age equipped with certain eco-expectations. A naturally grown product was always the preferred product. But I was a naive and timid user for years. It wasn't till I went to art school in the late 80s and I met people who regularly grew and dealt in ounces and pounds rather than the grams I was used to. But there are bad moments. The whitey is a term I learnt from an experienced smoker that describes fantastically that horrible lost in space feeling that you get when you've had one puff too many. The only recourse is to lie down in the fetal position and hope the feeling passes. It's a really nasty state. You miss the party, and it requires kindness, compassion, and time to recover. The whitey is pot's answer to a sick booze hangover, and the reason you should only take drugs with people you trust and know will look out for you. Oh, but really, just writing that makes me feel like a fake. Drug warnings are never very convincing, because in all the finger wagging, the elephant in the room is that getting high can be great fun. If you feel bigger, better, more creative and funnier when you get high, then you tend to keep doing it. It's true for the every up, there's always a corresponding down, but really, these are limits that you can only judge for yourself. In my experience, regular pot smokers dream less. This always worried me. One of the features of not getting stoned are nights of vivid, relentless dreaming, as if your subconscious is catching up for itself. I reckon it took me 4 nights off the pot before my dreaming would go back to a normal pattern. I reckon pot suppresses consciousness, at the heart of which is feeling. Marijuana, alcohol, all pharmaceuticals used habitually might always ultimately be about seeking to mask or avoid certain feelings that you deem unpleasant, as well as having fun. There are plenty of straight people out using other means to hide from themselves. Food, too much or too little, excessive work, excessive exercise. The trick is to know yourself and to be in charge of the quality of your own experiences. Humans can make hard work for consciousness, and we seek release in all sorts of ways. If marijuana becomes a habit, you have to accept a bit of the magic goes. What starts as a sparkling tripwiring of the synapses as the THC winds its quaintly erratic pathway through the mind can become a mind-numbing journey down a 6-lane highway if a daily habit kicks in. The comfort zone, the zone of habit, is a zone to fear, because it is fear. Best not to go there. A rule for life is to avoid feeling you have to take any substance in order to feel good. Or at least, give your habits an occasional upending to see what lies on the other side. To be in charge of the quality of your own experiences is another way of saying that there is no one else to blame for what happens in your life. Good, bad or indifferent, you need to own all that happens in and around you and know that how you deal with these experiences is the key to your own development as a human being. Also, long-term smoking of anything takes a physical toll, obviously. Several herbalists have told me that long-term pot smokers often present with digestive problems. And if mental stability isn't your strong point, pot is not recommended in any dose. But that's for you to weigh up. I know at periods where I was really struggling with life, pot was the last thing I'd go near. As for me, the sweet highs interfere with my ability to pursue a deeper relationship with my inner reality. But geez, I gotta say, I miss the buzz and the sense of endless inventiveness that went within and the time that felt really strange. But this was when I was young and could ignore all symptoms that weren't about creativity and fun. So go well, dear nephews. This is the letter from Auntie Amanda, sent with love.